right, welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of therapies, including creative arts therapy, expressive therapy, and creative approaches to therapy. I'm your host, Kate Shannon, and I am really excited about today's episode. And I know I say that about every episode, but I really am excited about every episode. I'm a pretty excitable person, and I really love podcasting and talking with other people. And I just find such joy in doing this. So I really mean that when I say it. And so thank you for listening and supporting too, because this is just a really amazing experience, and I'm really grateful for it. So before I tell you a little bit about my guest, I just wanted to extend well wishes, happy holidays, whatever it is that you may be celebrating this week. I hope that you are doing well and enjoying yourself. I hope it's a good week for you. I sent out in my newsletter that I'm really excited about spending a whole day in my pajamas because I just love my pajamas. So I hope you're getting your own time for the self-care that you need right now. And I hope this helps a little bit too, if this is something that that refills your cup. So today, my guest is Mai Abe, and she is a music therapist. She's the founder of Creative Vibes Music Therapy, and she provides music therapy sessions for people of all ages and abilities. Her passion for music and people started when she was really young, and she talks about this too. She has she's classically trained. And studied at the Eastman School of Music as well as the University of Rochester. It's really funny because Mai and I did not realize that we'd both lived in Rochester, and so we had just totally nerded out for a few minutes about it. It's always so fun when the world is such a small world when you run into people who have lived where you have. But her desire to pursue music therapy came from wanting to honor the process of music making rather than focusing on the end result. I just love that so much. It's such a beautiful way to put the value of music. And so she ended up pursuing her master's at Loyola University in New Orleans and completed her internship in expressive therapies in Utah. So I'm so grateful to her for coming on and talking about this topic, because it can definitely be a harder topic to talk about. It requires a lot of sensitivity as well. And Mai's passion and sensitivity and desire to learn is so captivating. And it was just so awesome to listen to her journey, the things that she learned, the things that she's passionate about. You can hear it in her voice, and I think that's one of my favorite things, is hearing people get passionate about, you know, what really drives them. And you can really hear that in Mai's episode. And so it was so wonderful to talk with her about such a delicate topic, and I feel like she was just so graceful and really wonderful in this episode talking about these topics. So I do want to let you know on this end that we do talk about ethnocentrism in music therapy, as well as the arts and music itself. We talk about racial injustice a little bit in this episode. So just knowing that up front, if this is the time for you to listen to this right now, then wonderful. But if you need to put this episode aside for, you know, until you can listen to it, then, you know, take that time to listen to what you need before diving into this episode. But it's a wonderful episode, and Mai has a bunch of great resources. So don't forget to check out our show notes, and I will talk with you on the other side. All right, Mai, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Yes, I am so pumped that you're here. I so much enjoyed our conversation about Rochester before.
I know, it's so crazy that like we both have been in Rochester.
Yes. Yep. And know the power of Wegmans and a garbage plate.
Amen. Amen.
Yes. Well, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do and where you are? Because you've actually just moved to a new place too.
Yes, yes. So I just moved to Houston from the Bay Area, like in the past, it's been like about a month that I've been down here now. But I founded a small private practice called Creative Vibes Music Therapy, and I've actually been fortunate enough to be able to hire a few people. So I have a few people working in the Bay Area right now, and we're working on possibly building something back up in Houston. I primarily do a lot of work with teens and adults in mental health treatment and children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
That's so exciting that you've gotten to the place where you're hiring, you're, you know, bringing on more people to your team.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. When I first started it, you know, this, I had no idea where this was going to go. And then COVID hit. So I was like, wow, that's, I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, I've been very, very fortunate and really lucky.
Yes, that is so awesome. And I think speaks so much to how powerful services can be, regardless of if they're telehealth or however they are, people still need support.
Absolutely. I think especially during these times, this is a time where everybody can use a little extra support.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I feel that. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I think that one of the ways that I actually found you is because of your YouTube channel, which is awesome. And I will have a link to that for in the show notes for listeners. And you have so many awesome videos on there from, like, you know, interventions to what job prospects are like in music therapy. I feel like it's such a great place for young music therapists to go and seasoned therapists to go for ideas. But some of the videos that you had posted, one of them just totally sent me on like a nerd spiral of the untold music therapy history. And we talked a little bit beforehand about that of, you know, I have an anthropology degree and I kind of mm-hmm. love digging into that stuff. But mm-hmm. can you tell us a little bit about maybe just a little bit of the context of what that video talked about and some information that's in that video?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess what kind of inspired this was, I mean, there's just been this movement, right? Especially now, the civil rights movement, Black Lives Matter. And especially if you're a music therapist and you're listening to this, in the Facebook group of Music Therapists Unite, there's been a lot of controversy around the people who were in charge of that. So that kind of really made me think about, you know, what is music therapy? Where is music therapy in that context? And I actually did a lecture on music therapy with a group called the Subtle Asian Mental Health Collective with a fellow music therapist who was Chinese. And in that lecture, I was talking and generally speaking how minor sounds sad and major scales sound happy. And then she actually added that this can change in different cultures and how there are different modalities and sounds in other cultures that mean different things. And so that was really kind of the point where it led me to start questioning, you know, where does all of my understanding about music come from and where am I getting these generalizations from? And, you know, why don't I know more about all these other, there's so much more out there. So that's kind of where I started with that. And I think with, as music therapists, we all know like how music therapy started. The general idea is that, oh, we had Aristotle and Socrates and Plato, and they really started thinking about how music affects your mind and your body. And then World War I, World War II happened, and all the European and American soldiers had these musicians come in to play music, and that's when music therapy really started to take hold and become recognized as a profession. And I also have a classical music background, and within classical music, again, that's such an ethnocentric viewpoint of music history. You know, like all of our famous composers, they're all German or Austrian or French, and we really don't even dive into, you know, what about other countries' classical music, like Indian classical music or Chinese classical music? And so that's really kind of where I started to, why I started to dive into that.
Yes, that, I feel like that inquiry, it's that thing of you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, sometimes it's like a seed. Like it sounds like, you know, that it's like that seed gets planted. And mm-hmm. then it's like, wait, what don't I know? What am I missing? And then you start digging and it's like this whole new world of discovery of all the things that aren't a part of our kind of formalized education.
Yes.
That really should be. That should be just the standards of that education, but they're missing.
Absolutely. I think as for me, personally speaking, when I was growing up, I grew up in a primarily white upper middle class neighborhood. You know, I was the only Japanese American person there, and there were other Asian Americans around, but they were more Chinese or Korean. And I always felt so ostracized for my own culture, and doubly so because I didn't want to be involved with that. I wasn't proud of my background because I was so wanting to be just like everybody else, and it was clear that I wasn't. So as I've grown older and the more that I've been able to reflect on that and become proud of my background, the more that I've been able to start questioning these things as well, these views that I've held for my whole life.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I can't imagine the externally, it's there's not always like the support to explore that. And then when there's not the representation in your education of those things, I would imagine it feels like it makes being farther away from that identity, like it pushes you a little bit farther away from reaching out to that identity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about in that discovery when, you know, all of that kind of that process, because I think it really is a really intense process. What kinds of things did you find out in your exploration in the history of music or music therapy music?
Yeah. So it's so interesting, right? Music as therapy has been documented for thousands of years in Chinese culture, in Indian culture. And actually, music as therapy was documented in the Yellow Emperor's Music as Medicine textbook almost 3,000 years ago. And that's insane to think about, that music has been such a part of the human existence for so long. And classical Chinese music, this is really interesting, they use the five element theory. So there are certain notes that are corresponded with certain elements in the world, such as fire, wood, metal. And those five elements are also coordinated with seasons, organs, colors. And so they use that theory to promote the healing powers of music. And they have specific tonalities, which kind of correspond a little bit to the Western notation, but those promote healing powers in your body. And which is crazy to think that it's so closely connected to what music therapy is, right? And the belief that music does have healing powers. And another thing that I learned, so in ancient India, they have these palm leaf manuscripts which document the use of music in psychological ailments. And again, that's just like, what? It's crazy. You know?
That's so cool.
You know, and I'm not sure. I feel like there's a certain, maybe like a reticence to embrace this. I'm not sure if maybe it's because you know, it's outdated or it's not like exactly, you know, scientifically calculated or certain, you know, it wasn't exactly in the Western idea of what science-based evidence-based should look like. But this is just proof that music has been such a huge part of our human existence for so long, and it's incredible that we don't talk about that in school.
Yes, that it's interesting that there is a reticence, but at the same time, it does, like, now that you're talking about it, I'm like, wow, okay. Then there's that ethnocentrism and like kind of that ethnocentrism on top of that of, well, here's this new information, but wait, it doesn't fit how I want it to fit. So no, which is continuing that negative cycle of not really holding space for everything that's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think this is a problem in not just music therapy, but just in music in general, in the classic music industry especially. You know, so much of what we learn is based around Baroque or French Impressionistic or, you know, Russian, or just all these eras of classical music within Europe. And then that has translated over to how we implement and think of music in music therapy, which ostracizes so much of the population of the whole world.
Yeah, because that really, we're basing so much of, you know, I think as music therapists, we pride ourselves in our ability to manipulate music in the way that we need to support our clients, whether that's creating it or adapting it, however it is. Mm-hmm. But if we're only doing that from a mindset of classical European music, mm-hmm. then there's so much harm we could potentially be doing in that.
Exactly.
Of so much harm.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, as music therapists, like we understand how powerful music is, and we know that music can cause harm. And for us to understand that, but to also not acknowledge that these ethnocentric views could possibly be causing harm is somewhat of a cognitive dissonance that I think a lot of us are struggling with.
Yes, I love cognitive that's 100% yes. Mm-hmm. That's such a good way to explain it, because I think when if this is like new information, if somebody hasn't heard about this before, and you know, we were kind of talking about this, how it's like this seed that gets planted, and it takes a little while to digest it and understand it and really piece everything together. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also an element of, you know, like, wow, I could have really done damage before this. You know, I've mm-hmm. been a music therapist for this long, and how many times have I missed the mark mm-hmm. on with music because I was not really fully using a multicultural lens.
Yes. And actually, like, I had this coming, I guess, like awakening, so to speak, when I read this article. It must have been back in like March or April, about mm-hmm. racist children's songs. And I've been working on The Railroad was one of them, and this is a song, or Jimmy Crackhorn. These are all songs that seem benign but have racist undertones that were used to put down Black Americans. And when I heard that, you know, I was like, no, like, I've been working on The Railroad, like, I use that all the time, like, oh god, I should know better. But that's the thing, is that we are only doing what we can with the knowledge that we have. And what we need to do is that when we do find that knowledge, to not beat ourselves up for having done that and thinking, oh, we should have known better, like, what's wrong with us, we're a terrible music therapist, but to be kind and compassionate with ourselves and to learn from that experience.
Yes, it's just, we can do better, so let's do better. Mm-hmm. And not like the beating ourselves up just doesn't serve a purpose. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of times that is the thing that ends up leading to, you know, feeling defensive, mm-hmm. which then just things crumble, mm-hmm. you know, then there's no communication, there's no growth. Mm-hmm. And when we can do that, like you said, like hold that space for ourselves to, like, okay, be kind to ourselves. And then how do we get better?
Exactly. And it's, you know, we can't learn when we are feeling attacked, when we're feeling defensive. And when people bring this to our attention, for the most part, they're bringing it to our attention because they believe that we are capable of doing better, and they believe in us, which is why they bring this stuff to our attention.
Yes. I often think of, like, in 40 years, we're going to look back and be like, oh my gosh, like, there's so much more even past where we are now mm-hmm. of the things we don't know that we're going to learn in the next 40 years that are only going to make us better, but we have to be open to it.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but the, you know, there's these views in music therapy that fundamentally, I think they come from, you know, I think a lot of music historians were probably, there was a lot of white music historians who then took white, you know, or European music. And there's just this whole kind of missing element of all of the other, which I think it gets often labeled into like world music. But all of this other music that can support us and make us better music therapists. Have you noticed anything different about how music is used in other cultures, places, versus how music is used kind of classically in our European kind of the kind of ethnocentric way that we've been using it?
You know, I think what's really interesting and universal and beautiful about music worldwide is that, generally speaking, people understand that music has an effect. Music has an effect on us psychologically and physically. And it varies a little bit on like how they understand that, if that makes sense. So one thing that I learned is that in Native traditions, they believe that music had mystical powers, and they used it in healing rituals or in planting rituals. And that was one way that they utilized music. And so there's kind of like a spiritual aspect in a lot of music. And that's the case in European music as well. To me, it feels like European music is, like, music theory wise, it seems to be a little more like rigid, if that makes sense. There's a little bit more rigidity and more rules. And I think this was something that I kind of struggled with when I was in school for classical music. It was the rigidity and like you want to play, you want to put your own spin on it, but you know, you don't want to disrespect the original composer. So there's kind of that inability to truly be free within that musical structure, which was something that I feel like I struggled with.
Yes. Yeah. I totally relate to that, because I had a, maybe not as traditional. I was not classically trained really whatsoever. Did music in high school, but then had to do very classical type of training for music therapy. And always felt really frustrated, because it was like, there's so many other avenues of like musicking, I think is that one of the ways I can just think of making music, being in music, doing music, whatever it is, besides the traditional European classical music. And I barely got into school into music therapy because of that lack of classical training. And this goes like down to like two different paths too, of that is a huge issue in our field.
Yes.
In that classical training is kind of the norm of what we base accepting students on. But then it's also this whole issue of, if that's the precedent we're setting that music therapy is, then we're really only giving space for music therapy in a, you know, European sense.
Yes. Yes. And that is something that I've noticed as well. And this is like it's being a classical musician is a huge privilege. It is so expensive. It is so much time, and not a lot of people have those privileges. And I'm so lucky that I was able to have all this classical music training. But you rarely have spots in a music therapy program for the kid that, you know, learned everything by ear, but maybe can't read music, or the kid that is so good at logic and like electronic music and beat making, but like, you know, they like don't really play guitar that much, or, you know, like the kid that can't afford an instrument. And I mean, these are people that have so much potential in making music therapy so accessible and what it should be, which is something that can reach people of all ages and all abilities. And if we aren't willing as a field to accept these type of, if we are going to be gatekeeping the musicianship that needs to be within, that you need to become a music therapist, then are we really doing the work that we claim that we're doing?
Yes. Oh my God, I just got chills. Gatekeeping, that is it, yes, like that gatekeeping, like we're claiming to be doing all of this stuff. And, you know, we have classes often about multicultural music and we might know some of it, mm-hmm. but what, you know, the foundational elements of what we're doing as music therapists, we're not doing what we're saying that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like right now the definition of being like a skilled music therapist, right now we're in a really performative place, to be musically competent, so to speak, but in specific genres. You know, nobody wants to hear an acoustic version of, you know, Michael Jackson. Nobody wants to hear like an acoustic version of, you know, Travis Scott, you know, and this is music that's relevant now. Like, how are we going to keep up with this time? I always like think, you know, what are music therapists going to look like when we're, you know, in hospice, or where, you know, what is that going to look like? You know, like there's a lot of music that I like, you know, a lot of maybe hip hop or rap or, you know, whatever it is, that is definitely not something that I want to hear an acoustic version of, you know, that just doesn't make any sense.
100%. That's such a good way to think about it too. And you mentioned this earlier, you did say, you had said something about technology of, there is so much music, especially now, you know, that is based off of technology. And you can be an amazing musician who makes music through technology. That's like a given. I think everybody knows that. But why don't we have those music therapists?
Right.
Where are they? Why is it
we
happening?
Need you.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes, we need you. You need to teach us.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I mean, how many times – this happens to me all the time where I work with a young teenager who I'm like – I think I'm relatively, you know, I'm average with technology and technical music in that sense. And they are light years ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, this is where I need a CMTE course majorly.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just started playing around with Logic and it's incredible what all the stuff that you can do. And it's just like, it's so incredible. Like how, like, as somebody who has so much music knowledge, how incompetent I am.
Like, I'm right there with you.
Like, I should, you know, be able to do this, but it just like doesn't make any sense to me. And that's kind of where we're lacking right now.
Yes, yes. One person, I probably drive her a little bit insane, but Gabby from Clinical Populations, she actually started Technook, which is a really awesome tech-based website for music therapists who are looking to learn more about, you know, whether it's podcasting or lighting or, you know, recording and doing, you know, creating music. And I am so thankful that that is out there, because it's something, you know, to be like, okay, this can be a place for music therapists to, a resource that we absolutely need, but there's still the fundamental issue of there should be more people in our profession who that gatekeeping is working. I think like you said earlier, that gatekeeping is unfortunately working.
Yes. And you know, this is like something that I have been really guilty of, especially when I was in school for classical music and I was like, you know, like, look at all these, like, this music sucks, you know, this is not music, you know, who listens to
you
that?
You pushed some buttons.
you know how much work I have to do to play this instrument, and it's that kind of mentality that's so harmful, and, like, this is something that I really had to come to terms with, and, you know, there were facilities that I worked in, especially when I was doing a lot of work with teenagers and residential treatment centers, where these facilities will specifically censor hip hop and rap music, specifically those genres. And because like, oh, the content, but there's so many other genres that, you know, cover these, you know, whatever it is, it's maybe violence or misogyny or what have you. And there's a lot of other genres that cover these same topics, but we don't really talk about it. We really only talk about it in the aspects of hip hop and rap, how it's so harmful for kids, how it's a dangerous. And people said the same thing about jazz. Okay, this is you know, we're just playing through the same thing, and it's so interesting that this is, again, like, and this is why we have to learn history, because if we don't learn it, we're bound to repeat it.
Oh my gosh, yes, that is so. I love how you brought in the history of that too, of how this is just repeating history of like jazz was, what was it? It was like the whole thing with, oh, when you're improvising, you're in some other subconscious place that's
the devil's
scary. Yes. Oh my gosh. And it is another way to shut down somebody else's expression.
Yes.
And say, no, that is not, you know, oh, okay, you can express yourself, but not that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
That resonates so much with me, with jazz, because that was where I kind of found a like saving grace in doing jazz music, because I learned music mostly by ear. I'm a terrible reader of music.
Oh, no, I respect that. No, I just want to say I respect that, because it was like that. I was the opposite. Like, I'm a really great sight reader. You know, I read music my whole life. But when it came to like playing by ear, I struggled. Yeah. It was so hard. So
yes.
Kudos.
And thank you. And I respect reading though too, because it is like, there are so many times, and I can feel this because I'm not good at it. So I feel like those moments stick out where like a kid would be like, I want to hear this song. And I'd look it up and I'd be like, all right. Okay, here we go. I'm going to try it. And when I wish I had those skills, and I know that that's like, that's, you know, those are the skills that I need to work on. But I was so good at by ear stuff too. And improv and jazz make so much space for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you were saying before, with some of that rigidity, I do think in music therapy, there is a lot of space for improvisation. I do think that we've made space for that, but there's not necessarily, the history isn't connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just like, well, let's improvise, and, you know, but not so much of like, where did this come from? And what are the things that are kind of connected with the space of improvisation, like jazz and all of that thing that I think would be so much more, it could be so much more powerful if we had more knowledge of that context.
Absolutely. And there is this book, I haven't read it yet, but it's been on my list for so long. It's called The Therapeutic Value of Hip Hop. I think that's what it's called. And it just really dives deep into like how important hip hop and rap is, especially for Black Americans, like how this is a form of their expression. And it just, again, reinforces the idea for me that when we don't allow a space for certain genres just because it's not, you know, PC enough, or, you know, it's inappropriate. When we tell kids, oh, your music is inappropriate, what are we really telling them? We're telling them that you're inappropriate. You know, we can't accept you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's felt so deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I'm going to put a link to that book in the show notes. That sounds awesome.
Yes.
And a book I also definitely need to read, because I do not know that much about hip hop and rap in general, but it's something that sounds like just a fantastic book to really dig into.
Yeah. And you know, it's, I first, you know, I took a jazz history class, I think, in my master's, when I was doing my master's for music therapy. And that's kind of like, really, I mean, jazz is the foundation of all music, you know, of all American music. Black Americans are the backbone of the music that we listen to right now, whether it's country, pop music, big band music, blues. They're the backbone, and we really need to acknowledge that and give them the respect that they deserve. Like, they've done so much for this country.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it feels like that should, there is sidebar. I want to, just as a side note, I recognize that I am a white lady talking about this and that it would, you know, this is a topic that is so important. And I think in trying to be an ally talking about this, you know, to get it out there and bring more awareness to this issue. But I just want to acknowledge that as we're diving into that. But I think that there is so much of that history that should just be a natural part of, like, braided within what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this pebble that's just so far away, that, like, you might get the, you know, some random schools might offer it or like, hey, this is an option to take this course. But it feels like it's just, like you said, like, jazz is foundational to our music. How is it not a required intensive course that we're going through?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want to talk about the history of music, this is the history, you know? This is where a lot of it began.
Yes, yes. As we're kind of going in this direction, because you had another really awesome video about the racial inequality in music therapy. And We're touching on that, I think, a lot with music therapy. And I'm also assuming, because there are many creative arts therapists who listen to this, that this can apply to many art forms, you know, that ethnocentrism with art making is not just within music. And I'm really interested now to be like, how does that happen in art and dance and, you know, all of these other different creative modalities?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you've planted that seed there, and I'm going to keep going.
I love it. I love it.
Yes, yes. You had shared this video about the issues of diversity and representation in music therapy. And we touched on a little bit about how there's that gatekeeping, but can you tell us a little bit more about that and what you shared in that video?
Yeah. So, you know, something this I guess I want to talk a little bit about what inspired me. And again, you know, this year has just been, what a year, you know? Yeah. and coronavirus happened, and it was incredible. Like, I just feel like the amount of prejudice against Asian Americans has just been really unearthed, you know? It's just been nasty and a little scary, I think. Hate crimes against Asian Americans have increased by like 2,000% in this year, which is insane. That's crazy. And, you know, it wasn't like a ton, you know, last year, but still, like, that's a huge increase. And I read this book, and like, as that was happening and I was, you know, slowly trying to come to terms with my Asianness. Yeah. I read this book called Minor Feelings by Kathy Park Hwang. And this is a book about an Asian American growing up in America and her experiences. And I was like, wow, like, that's like not anything that I've ever, you know, that's not like something that is common, a story that's told, you know, and this is like something that I've always felt very alone in. And this book really just kind of opened my eyes and made me realize, you know, my experiences might not actually be so, so individual. And she talks a lot about the model minority myth. And I'm sure you're familiar with what the model minority is, you know, how it implies that if you're good, then you're going to fulfill the American dream. And then they, you know, the people point to these people that are so good, the model minority, they're like, look, they did it. So what's wrong with you? You're not trying hard enough. There's something wrong with you. And that is so harmful. It's so harmful to the civil rights movement. It's so harmful for all minorities. And so that, like, kind of, it really got me going, you know. I was like, I gotta talk about it. And I did a little bit of I did a little research into, you know, okay, like, I see a lot of white women in music therapy field, you know, like, what's up with that? And BIPOC people make up less than 10% of the music therapists in this country, and that's crazy. That is so crazy to me. And again, this is like so steeped, it's so connected with the history, with the gatekeeping, with the privileges. There's so much embedded into this. But again, like, the classical music industry, our focus on musical skills that are steeped in ethnocentric viewpoints, are the need for certain privileges in order to even apply to school. And again, it's not cheap to become a music therapist. And I know that you know this too. Like, if you got to pay like $400 for an exam, you got to do a 6-month internship for free. If you don't have the support and the resources, then how are you possibly going to be able to do that? And then there's so many people that are so qualified. They're just like, that doesn't make any sense for me. Like, I don't have that kind of support. And yes. So that was why I made that video. That video means a lot to me, because like that kind of like that was like the door opening for me for my own personal journey into like embracing my heritage and like who I am and kind of learning more about and talking and speaking up a little bit more about that.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. That was really, really powerful to hear your story of finding that and then, you know, getting revved up and like diving in. And I love that video is, you know, it sounds like it's really connected. You know, it's like a very sentimental video.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, and these were all things that I kind of have like thought about, but I kind of pushed away. You know, I was like, oh, that's just silly. Like, you know, like you're overreacting. But then it's like, no, I'm not overreacting. This is real. Like, these are real experiences that I've had and other people have had. And somebody needs to say something. We got to say something.
Yes. 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 Have to start speaking up. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. That video, I saw that one first. And it was like, I think I watched it like 3 or 4 times and just was like, yes, yes, yes. Like, and it's that will be linked in our show notes too. And it's really, you know, I recognize too that like I have the privilege that I didn't notice this, mm-hmm. you know, as much until, you know, especially this year and mm-hmm. having some inklings in the history, like, you know, of like, wait, is that really, you know, like we were talking about off air, I remember in my music history class, mm-hmm. And like it being like, it started in the 50s. And I was like, what?
Excuse me?
But it didn't, you know, like I didn't take it any further. And that's my privilege. Like it didn't affect me enough, you know, and which is, you know, definitely a privilege to not have to see that experience. And so it's just really powerful that there are so many more people talking about it and bringing up all these points that, you know, we might be missing, or, you know, things, different ways that we can improve, because this feels like a crowd that we're coming, you know, like if we're coming in, you know, like it's like, I keep thinking of like crowdfunding, but like so many people are coming together, uh-huh. sharing these ideas. And like, I feel like with this momentum, that's when we can hopefully make more change, especially in our profession.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this year, I don't know what it is about this year, but like I can feel it. I really believe that we're on the cusp of really creating some change. And that's really awesome, you know. And like, I mean, I have to acknowledge, you know, I was a little nervous about sharing that video just because I was like, well, you know, like, you ain't got it so bad. You know, you're fine. You got a lot of privilege. You know what I'm saying? Like, and especially like as a Japanese American, like I have to acknowledge that, you know, we are the colonizers of the Asian world, you know? And so within that, like, I really have to like kind of examine my own privileges. And with my family, you know, being like upper middle class, like that's another privilege. But, you know, and that's the thing about us as humans, is that like there are privileges that we have in certain aspects. And then there are areas that where we are underprivileged. And then when we, especially as minorities, we have this sort of expansive and like what's that word? Just dipping our feet in both worlds, you know. And I like, yeah, especially for myself, like I felt like I was constantly dipping my feet in both worlds and just not really sure of where I fit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think like you had like the way that you framed that with we all have like those different levels of where we are at with when it comes to privilege of there's this one activity that's coming to my mind. I just did this really awesome training through UNT. It was like a diversity in play therapy training. Mm-hmm. And it was like a flower that had all these different areas where you could hold privilege. And, you know, that's race, sex, you know, sexual orientation, ability, disability, mm-hmm. relationship to whether you're in the U.S. or if you're in a different geographic region, mm-hmm. religion, like all these different things. And it was you kind of had to go through and do like paper clips of which one that you had privilege in. And it was really interesting to look at privilege as like a whole like that and say, mm-hmm. like, okay, here is where I hold privilege. And it feels like that's where I can like help or like, you know, those are that's empowering. Like, what can I do with that privilege? Okay, mm-hmm. this is where I'm privileged. Now, where can I go, like, get to work with it?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, my goodness. I am so thankful that you, first of all, that you put that video out there. Like you said, that is, it's really hard to talk about this stuff publicly. I don't think it's easy. I think it's, you know, it's definitely something that needs to be done, but it can be really uncomfortable. And I think that's awesome that you put the video out there, and I think it's sparking so much more conversation too. So thank you for doing that initially and coming on and talking about it. I appreciate both of those so much.
Thank you so much. You know, that really means a lot, just because I remember when I was like trying to decide if I should put it out, I made my boyfriend watch it. I was like, are you sure? Like, people are going to care about what I have to say. Like, what if they laugh at me? So
never. Everyone's like shaking their head like, yes, yes, yes. Tell me more. Oh my gosh. Yes. I didn't think about that. Good. Absolutely. Yes. Well, I'm wondering if you can tell us, were there any, like, I know you mentioned a couple books actually, but were there any, other resources that are like your favorite resources as you've been diving into these topics that you could tell our listeners about?
Yeah. So, the first one that really kind of like sparked everything was this article from Decolonizing the Music Classroom. And that was the one where they talked about like the racist history of children's songs. And that was the one that really, really got me thinking. And they're fantastic. Like, they do so much work. And I love that they really focus on like anti-racism work with children and like how to like introduce these topics. So highly recommend that. And, you know, just I feel like social media has been so, I mean, you know, it's such a big part of our lives these days. And just being on Instagram, following like social justice, like therapists or social workers on Instagram have been really, really influential in helping me learn more and like learning some more about resources. And Brené Brown, are you familiar with her? Podcast is incredible. Like, I'm really obsessed with her. I think she's so cool. And maybe if I give her a shout out on this podcast and she'll notice me.
Hey, Brown, would you like to be on the show?
But she, her podcast.
She's the fangirl the whole time.
But she, like, she has this really, really awesome podcast that I started listening to last year. Just a ton of really awesome people on it, like Ibram X. Kendi, who is the author of the book How to Be an Anti-Racist, which is also another incredible resource. Lots of work and talk about all this work that we have to do and what we have to look forward to in the future.
Awesome. Those are great. I'm going to make sure that there are links to all of those things in our show notes. Wow, this has been just such a phenomenal conversation. I feel like I could, you know, we could probably talk about this for like 5 hours.
Still, like, can't even scratch the surface.
But maybe that just means we'll need a part two sometime.
Ooh, so, yes. Yeah.
But can you tell our listeners where's a good place to follow you? I will have your YouTube channel linked and all of your stuff, but can they follow you on social media anywhere? Reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. All my social media is under the name Creative Vibes MT for music therapy. So Instagram, Facebook, my website is that. So
super.
So yeah, follow me there. I just made a TikTok.
Nice.
But I'm like a little embarrassed about it. So if you can find me on TikTok, then you feel free to follow me. But I don't. I'm scared to get my head out right now.
I have not harnessed the power of it. I love watching it, but I'm like, man, I need to start doing those, and I just haven't found.
I know they're fun. They're fun, but yeah, they're hard. They're hard. You know, it's not like any other social media site that I've ever used, you know, so no. Still trying to figure it out.
Well, this has been so wonderful. I am so thankful that you took the time to come on to talk about a topic that is not always easy to talk about. And I really appreciate that. I know that it takes vulnerability, and I also feel that too. It makes me nervous to talk about this stuff, but I'm so appreciative that you came on and shared your experience. I think this is just such a valuable, valuable topic for people right now.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me. It's honestly like shocking to me that, you know, people are hearing what I have to say and actually like it's motivating them. So that like makes me really happy and kind of reinforces that maybe I'm on the right track. So I really appreciate that.
Just gonna say keep going. Awesome. Well, Maya, this has been so wonderful. Thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Mai. I want to let you know that there are a lot of resources in the show notes. Some books that Mai had mentioned, as well as links to different places to follow her and what she's doing. Her YouTube channel is really awesome. I highly recommend checking that out. So also, I would like to invite you to check out our anonymous survey that is there for you to voice your opinion, suggestions, comments, concerns at any time. If there's something that feels like it needs to be addressed or something you want to add to the conversation, anything that comes up while you're listening to this, if we missed the mark on something, any of those things, I invite you to please use that survey. And also always feel free to reach out to me via email. If you want to do it anonymously, I like to keep that in our show notes for that purpose. Your feedback, your comments and suggestions, they're all incredibly important, and I take those so much. They're very important to me and I value them so, so much. So always feel free to reach out. All of those things make us better, what we're doing here, and we're always striving to be better and to grow, and you're part of that process. So I invite you to do that in whichever mode you'd like, anonymously or by email, kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. Also, we have some exciting things happening. I know we mentioned this on the last podcast, so don't forget to hop on our newsletter so you can stay up to date with what is going on. I just sent out in our newsletter this week, we have a sale going on in our shop, but there's always different things happening. So it's the quickest way that I can update everybody on new things happening. And we've got an exciting project that's coming up that's going to be launching in January. And I am so excited about it. I can't talk about it yet, and it frustrates me that I can't talk about it because I'm really excited about it. And as you probably know, when I get excited, I really like to talk about stuff. So I'm doing my best to not talk about it as much. However, I'm getting really excited to start talking about it. And I believe in a few weeks that me and my the other person that I'm doing this project with, we are going to have an episode about this project. So stay tuned for that. It's going to happen hopefully in a few weeks. I am again wishing you the best on however you are enjoying this week. I hope that you're having some time for self-care, some time for family, if it's via Zoom, however it is, if you're seeing family, some time to yourself, whatever it is that you need, I hope you're getting it right now, and I'm sending you the best. Thank you again, as always, for being a listener, and be creative.